Welcome to the Resources for Integrated Care webinar series on member engagement. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live in the summer of 2015 called Training Consumers for Engagement, Developing a Curriculum that Empowers Members. This webinar series is presented by the Lewin Group in collaboration with Community Catalyst and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to ensuring that beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality health care that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. So to support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care to Medicare and Medicaid enrollees, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts, please visit resourcesforintegratedcare.com.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our moderator. William Dean is the Delivery System and Consumer Engagement Manager at Community Catalyst. William builds collaborative relationships with Medicare, Medicaid health plans, providing these and other safety net delivery systems with technical assistance and consultative services about consumer engagement and patient activation tools that lead to improved care delivery, better health outcomes, and lower costs of care. Prior to joining Community Catalyst, William was a consultant to the California State Senate Subcommittee on Aging and Long-Term Care, where he staffed bills, analyzed legislation before the Committees on Human Services, Health, and Budget and Fiscal Review, and conducted oversight and informational hearings on a variety of issues affecting seniors and people with disabilities. A former geriatric social worker, William is a graduate of Boston College, Salem State University School of Social Work, and the University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law. William?
Thank you, Amy, and hello, everyone. As Amy said, I'm with Community Catalyst. We're based in Boston, and we work as a national nonprofit consumer health advocacy organization in over 40 states to bring the consumer voice to any discussion that impacts their health care, whether it be at the policy level, the delivery system level, or individual patient provider level. So let me go ahead and introduce our two presenters. Margo Michaels is the principal with Health Action and Access Consulting. Margo has extensive experience in adult education focusing on consumer advocacy. She's considered a national expert in improving research through community engagement and was the founder of the Education Network to Advance Cancer Clinical Trials, ENACT. Bringing 20 years of progressive leadership in consumer and patient advocacy organizations, the National Cancer Institute, and consulting with medical providers, she has a strong commitment to social change through effective community engagement about healthcare issues. Margo has co-authored 13 peer-reviewed publications and holds an MPH from UNC Chapel Hill School of Public Health. Next, we have John Arnold, Project Manager for UCAN Ohio. John directs and coordinates a statewide coalition of stakeholders, advocates, and enrollees in the MyCare Ohio Dual Eligible Demonstration Project to advance policies to the state and CMS that improve the delivery of care for older adults and people with disabilities. He's responsible for evaluating models of care and quality measures and for recommending new models and metrics that lead to better health outcomes. John also recruits and trains consumers to advocate for themselves and to join their managed care organization's Consumer Advisory Committee through face-to-face interactions, focus groups, presentations, and Q&A forums with consumers. Prior to joining UCAN, John worked in critical organizing and outreach capacities for the Ohio Democratic Party and individual political campaigns, and has served in the United States Air Force as well as on many executive boards, including the Salvation Army and Goodwill Industries. John has a BA from Park College and an MBA from Dominican University. Next slide. So I'm going to just go over the agenda for today's webinar. First, I'll discuss how training fosters meaningful consumer engagement, and a little bit about the toolkit that we developed here at Community Catalyst and the training tool that is within that toolkit, and the on-site training services that we do provide to health plans who are developing consumer advisory committees and would like to have on-site training for their committees. I'll turn it over to Michael, who will talk about curriculum development, including objectives and activities that are in the curriculum that she has developed for us, and the survey instrument that we used recently in a pilot with Aetna Health Plan in Ohio. Margo will turn it over to John, who will then talk about consumer experience of participating in a training program, as part of their membership in an advisory committee. And he'll share with you the skills that folks needed to participate effectively, some of the ground rules that they developed, the roles that they play in an effective consumer advisory committee, and the feedback that they offered after they participated in the training. We'll also take a couple of polls of you all to find out a little bit more about what you're doing and what you're interested in doing going forward to improve your training capacity and your engagement of consumers on advisory committees. And then, of course, we'll turn it over to our presenters for a Q&A period so that you can ask specific questions to them and get some answers to your questions. Next slide, please. So why training? Well, first of all, it makes advisory committee members more committed and more effective in their role of advising the health plan. Many members haven't served on advisory committee before, so they can benefit from orientation to each other, to the consumer engagement process, and to the delivery system that is caring for them. It also teaches them beneficial skills that they can use in their activities on the committee. And then finally, it structures the dialogue so that the goals of the members of the committee as well as the goals of the health plan come together and everyone knows what the purpose is of the committee going forward. So the end result, we really believe, is a successful committee, one in which the members have information and skills and the goals are shared. Next slide, please. So just a brief overview of the project that I work for, Voices for Better Health. Provides technical assistance to health plans, advocates, and consumers working together to improve care delivery. As part of that project, we have developed a toolkit in collaboration with a lot of stakeholders across the board, from policymakers to health plans to consumer community health centers, and that toolkit is available on our website at that link right there. We also do, like I said, provide on-site training services. And if you are interested in those and learning more about that, you should email me at wdean@communitycatalyst.org. And last time we had a lot of questions. The last webinar that we did a couple weeks ago on consumer advisory committees, we really did have a lot of questions. And so I would urge all of you to email me if you have more questions. A lot of those answers will be posted on the Resources for Integrated Care website in the future. But we are thinking about doing a learning community. So if you're interested in participating in a learning community on a monthly basis for an hour and learning from each other, folks who are in the consumer engagement realm at health plans and trying to figure out how to do a lot of these things best, we'd love to basically facilitate that learning committee. And so please email me if you're interested in that. The next slide, I think we're going to turn it over to Margot Michaels to tell us about curriculum development.
Great. Thank you, Bill. I want to start off by talking about the importance of curriculum in ensuring that we have meaningful and quality consumer engagement. I think everyone here knows that it's easy to fall into a pattern of just having meetings because we need to have meetings rather than having meetings because we want to have meaningful engagement and input. And so underlying this entire curriculum and the training initiative is to empower consumers to feel engaged and to feel that they have an important role at the table and that they're not there to just listen, but they're there to engage and to help plan and to help see the impact of their input into different changes in the plan. When we started to develop the curriculum, the first thing that we had to do, of course, is to figure out what was important to include. And that included talking to key informants, folks that were involved with different plans, both in Ohio where we did the pilot and nationally. We also had folks who had been integrated into these kinds of initiatives review the outlines and the content that we came up with. We looked at the literature that was out there, and we also applied the principles from the toolkit that Bill just talked about. The philosophy, as I mentioned, is that we want to focus on changing behavior and changing attitudes with a focus on action. The idea of meaningful engagement, again, is not to sort of be grateful that one is on a committee, consumer advisory committee, but rather that one is providing insight. And built into that is obviously building confidence, since many of these folks have not had any experience in working on these kinds of committees. We want to make sure that we instill a sense of confidence and also a sense of their own skill and qualifications in being a members of this important initiative. The other things that we need to focus on, too, of course, is nice to know versus need to know. This is critical because as policy people and as people that care about this, we want to shove as much information as we possibly can into a training. And this is something we have to constantly fight with, but fight ourselves with. But as those of you who know who engage in these kinds of programs, we've got to curtail ourselves and realize that more is not necessarily better, and that we need to always be asking ourselves, do people need to know this or do people want to know this? Excuse me, I'm sorry. The final thing is that we want to make sure things are participatory. And the meaning of that is that we don't want to sit and have slides be presented over and over again and then have lunch and then have people go home. We want to have people participate and try things on for size during a training program. Next slide. So when we think about the objectives that we came up with, and again, these were iterative over time as we continued to develop the curriculum, there were a couple things that were important for us to make sure that we had in there. One was people had to have a sense of what the demonstration projects are about, that this is not just something unique to their state or unique to their plan. This is something that's going on nationally, and they're part of a national consumer movement. Second is that we wanted to give them a sense of what consumer advisory councils or committees are, and what that means for the benefit of their plan and the benefit of the people, of care of people in their community. Another thing is that we had here is we wanted to make sure that people had a sense, had an ability to be able to talk about their own concerns and hopes. This is really important because many of us sort of hold those fears, especially to ourselves, thinking things like, I can't possibly contribute, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I've never been to a meeting like this before, never recognizing that actually a lot of those concerns are shared. And also what hopes are, and those can be realistic hopes or unrealistic hopes, and by sharing those in a room, that can actually help to make it clear what we can do. So, for example, universal health care might be a hope that all of us want, but that is not sort of a realistic expectation of a consumer advisory council. Next slide. Then we wanted to get into some nitty-gritty about meetings. Again, some of these folks may have been comfortable being in a formal meeting situation. Some of them may not. But we wanted to really provide a lay of the land about how these meetings take place, how they work, what the purpose is, how they need to prepare for them. And we wanted to also give a sense to them about what could be effective in a CAC meeting and what could be less effective. And you'll see when I give you some examples that was a very interesting activity for them to think about, because I don't know if many of them had thought about, well, gosh, is this really a good use of my time or a good use of all of us sitting here around the table? And finally, well, I wanted to give a sense to them about the importance of the feedback loop. So again, these meetings and this committee is a part of their plan's administration and a part of their plan's policies and procedures that is not just limited to them in that room or the people that are sitting with them in that room, but really part of the plan's leadership, and that kind of feedback loop has to be constantly fed and reiterated. Next slide. We also let folks talk about what are the qualities that effective CAC members have. Again, we could have sort of just listed these in a slide and have everybody nod and then move on to the next section. But we engaged in a number of activities to help them think through what this means, what this would mean to them personally, what this would mean to them as their particular committee. And also, what they think is important. Now, what I might think is important may not be what they think is important, but really coming up with a group understanding of those important qualities, and then really getting a sense of where their strengths and weaknesses are, not as a a report card, but as a sense for them to think about, oh, wait, I really need to improve on that, or I don't really need to improve much on this. And, of course, all of us need to improve in various areas, whether we're experts or whether we are newbies at a particular activity. Next slide. So I want to share with you just two examples of activities that we did to get at some of the objectives that I mentioned. The first on the left side are cartoons of two different kinds of conversations. One is talks about a van picking the person up late, and now I can't see my doctor, and I'm angry. What should I do? And on the right side was the same person, but instead of talking about himself, is saying, I wonder how many people miss their appointments because of transportation problems. Juxtaposing these two situations was really helpful for the group, and John will be talking more about what we got to as a result of that conversation, but helping people understand the differences between a personal support group and understanding how my issues really are only important in far as this committee goes as it relates to other members, and really understanding that the collective responsibility is more important here than the individual responsibility. On the right-hand side, I've copied an example of one activity we did called Meaningful Agendas, or not. And we did this in small groups where the group had to take a look, each small group had to take a look at one of these agendas and see, do you think the plan is seeking meaningful feedback or not by an agenda like this? And what would you change? And there was a lot of aha moments in the group, both in small groups and large groups, about, wow, I never thought that this might not be an appropriate use of my time because I'm being talked at for 2 hours rather than, being engaged with. And other people said things like, wow, we should really be involved in forming an agenda rather than just receiving an agenda. So these are just two examples of activity that I wanted to share with you. Next slide. The materials that we provided were pretty comprehensive. We provided a trainer's guide to the trainers. I was one of them, and John was one of them. Helen John will talk more about his experience being there. But that was able for anyone to be able to pick up this guide and be able to be a presenter of this material with the idea that that person is not an expert but is actually a facilitator for group discussion based on key activities. We had a workshop guide that was for consumers that was short, wasn't duplicating all the slides as we often do, but actually really focusing on key points, activity sheets, etc. And this is the agenda. As you can see, it went from 9 to about 4. It was a tight day, but it also was and a long day, but it was also a day that I think was very energizing. I think this could also work as two shorter days rather than one long day. Next slide. We also did, as every good trainer should do, we did an evaluation at the end of each training, at the training we did. And because most of our group had literacy challenges, we wanted to use smiley faces and frown faces, and the middle was sort of neutral faces, meaning okay, well. And so as you can see here, this is a summary of our scores, and you can see where there's a sad face and there's no score, that's actually good. That means that we had very few sad faces in the room. And you can see that most people were actually in the well or very well category, and looking at sort of how well that they feel they can now do these things. This is obviously self-report. And I'll show you on the very bottom here about how prepared do you now feel to be part of the CAC, and you can see that that was well and very well. We would like certainly to do that as a pre-post to really get a sense of how people's assessment might change pre and post. Next slide. When we asked some qualitative feedback, we got some positive results there as well. We found that people enjoy the participatory aspects of it. They were also provoked into thinking about new kinds of things like goal setting or parking lots. that were things that they had not thought of. And, you know, as a result of this training, there were several people that, became more vocal, and John will talk more about that in a second. But we saw even those changes in the room while we were there.
I also want to thank my colleague and partner, Bargo, for co-facilitating a great day of training. So I'm going to briefly go through the selection process of a managed care organization, the training activities, and also some of the feedback. So UCAN Ohio and Community Catalyst believe that it was essential to partner with the managed care organizations in training and recruiting for their consumer advisory committees. So the first step, UCAN and Community Catalyst convened and facilitated a separate call with all the participating managed care organizations on the consumer engagement toolkit. So we went through the toolkit and answered some very good questions posed by the plans. So upon conclusion, we asked the plans for their commitment to not only use the toolkit, but to commit to allowing UCAN Ohio to help in the recruiting process. And one plan said yes right away to both questions. So UCAN and the plan's community liaison did a number of Q&As and forums with enrollees. So out of that, we recruited 21 participants, and all 21 received applications to complete. So 17 applications were returned to us. So our goal was to recruit 15 members, but we decided to allow all 17 to participate in the event that we had one, two, or three that dropped off. So at the first Consumer Advisory Committee meeting, we did the sign-off on the plan's confidentiality agreement. And we also discussed that it was necessary for them to be consistent and to commit to this process in order to have an effective consumer advisory committee. And we also shared with the members. So what Margo talked about was that feedback loop. So they are going to come to the meeting and they're going to discuss the issues, concerns that have been raised not only by themselves, but their friends and their family members. Those will be forwarded to the governing board. The governing board will come back at the next meeting with the members with resolutions and time frames. And also we did inform and to tell them that in order for this to become an effective consumer advisory committee, we will be scheduling training. So when we scheduled the training, we had to be flexible, and not only in the hours, which Margo talked about, but also in the days and the hours. So you have to take in consideration, if that member have dialysis or if that member needs his or her personal care attended to join them at the Consumer Advisory Committee. Next slide, please. So you can call them what you will, meeting norms, team agreements, rules of engagements, or conditions for success. But in order to have an effective consumer advisory committee, it's necessary to set up a few ground rules before you get started. And if you truly want buy-in, you must ensure that the members are advancing and participating in the creation of the ground rules. So we made this an activity to create the ground rules. We asked the members to list ground rules or what they think should be part of the ground rules. Then we asked them to rank them. And what you see here listed are the 8 to 10 ground rules that they came up with. So everyone agreed that the ground rules that were created will now be a guide adopted for future meetings. So again, with the ground rules, you must be flexible and not too rigid. For an example, on start-stop times, cell phones being off or on vibrate. But it's very important to be flexible. Next slide, please. So consumer advisory committees are not just about one individual's issue or concerns. It's very important that the members understand that this is not just about me, myself, my issues, or my concerns only. So we had them think about what is the role, or what they think is the role of a consumer advisory committee member. And we did this in an activity as well. And we asked them to list the roles, what they perceive as the role to be an effective member of a consumer advisory committee. And so I recall that, you know, one member cited going around to every member in her building that she knew participated in the dual demonstration and asking about their concerns or their positive experiences so she can discuss it at the next consumer advisory committee meeting. And we say to her, this is an example of what? And a lot of the other members shouted out, oh, she's representing others. So as you can see, we represent others became the first one that they all agreed upon and gave the highest marks. Next slide, please. So along with the role of consumer advisory committee members, we wanted the members to start thinking about what they had to contribute. Because each individual is unique and brings something different or a different perspective to the consumer advisory committee. So we did an activity to list what skill set do you believe you bring to the table. In listing their skill set, we asked them to think about their own strengths. So as we listed the skills, many of the members there were surprised when they thought about the skills they came to the Consumer Advisory Committee to contribute. So, you know, an example, a number of members told one member that was there in the training, we are so surprised that you are now opening up to speak. Because this member that was now opening up was asking probably the best questions of everyone sitting there, and also she was very articulate in the answers that she responded to us. As a matter of fact, she could, at least in my mind, could have been a facilitator. So listed on this slide were all the commonalities among the group. Next slide, please. To be effective, there are certain behaviors that must be avoided. And if these behaviors cannot be avoided, it could affect the commitment to improve the care. So we did an activity where we asked the group to choose the behaviors they think are most appropriate to avoid. And I can tell you that the group really had strong feelings about the top three listed on this slide. The smartphone, unrelated stories, and being disrespectful. They really had a lot of strong feelings about that. But what is important here on these meeting killers, if you will, is that members themselves must manage the process. And the group agreed that now they have a code of conduct for the Consumer Advisory Committee moving forward. Next slide, please. So as Margot mentioned, the training received great results on the feedback from the members. So a month later, the regular Consumer Advisory Committee convened. The committee chair, which is a UCAN Ohio recruited member, he created the agenda with the feedback from other members. And so the chair opened up the meeting and he discussed how much he got out of the training, and the chair and other members were mentioning to the members that did not participate how they thought that when they arrived at the training that it was just going to be another day long of a regular Consumer Advisory Committee meetings. And to their surprise, they had this great training. And also, in the training itself, we had not only that specific region community liaison there, we had two other regions from the plan, their community liaison there, and their feedback to us was, we want our committee members to be trained and trained soon. So I know that the members were engaged because they asked the plan community liaison, where is the flip chart? Where's the flip chart? We know we will have some parking lot items to be placed on the parking lot. And the chair stood up and explained exactly what a parking lot item is to the members that did not attend the meeting. So when the meeting concluded, the members stated, not only to the community liaison, but the vice president happened to be there as well. I'm sorry, the chief operation officer happened to be there. And they mentioned how productive the meeting had become. And they said now they feel that there is a sense of accountability with time frame that's been included in the process.
Great. Thank you, William, Margot, and John. We really appreciate your time sharing your knowledge and experiences on training consumers for engagement. The slide you see now is our participant survey. We're going to leave that up during the Q&A session, so please take a moment to complete the survey. Your feedback will help us to continue to provide quality webinars in the future. But in the remaining time we have left, let's turn our attention to questions. As a reminder, if you have a question, there's a few ways that you can submit them. You can utilize the chat feature, or you can use our AT&T operator. Melissa, at this time, could you remind our participants how to ask a question on the phone line?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is opened, and you may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing star 2. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the corresponding digits. Again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time.
Okay, while we wait for the first caller to dial in, we have a question that came in through our chat or through the Q&A feature here. It's a question for John. You talked about meeting killers. How do you prevent these things from happening?
Well, and thanks for that question, whoever submitted the question. The first thing you need to do is realize that there are meeting killers that take place, and you have to get the group to agree that there are a number of areas that will make the meeting and delay the meeting. So once you list those meeting killers out, as I said in the presentation, it is up to the members themselves that's on the committee to manage the process. And it will be even better if they have already selected a chair. So it starts with the chair, then it starts with the other members to hold the members accountable. Because remember, they agree that moving forward, this is the code of conduct that they will adhere to. So it is going to be incumbent, again, upon the members in the chair to manage the process.
Great. Thank you. Melissa, do we have any questions that have come through the phone line?
Yes, we have a question. Caller, please go ahead.
Do you have a training budget for committee?
This is Margot. Bill, maybe you're better off in answering it. The plan, we were able to get a site donated for the plan host the training, and the plan paid for lunch and breakfast. And Bill, I don't know what you would add to that.
Thanks, Margot. So to answer that part of it, you know, this was a pilot, so we provided the training services gratis to Aetna to work with us to help to, you know, determine if this was a, you know, they were good activities and it was going to be successful, and so figure out ways that we could tweak the training as well. So if you wanted to contact me, I can let you know about what kinds of pricing structures we could, you know, determine for training your advisory committee. But you know, in terms of, you know, of course, if you're going to do it yourself, you've got a budget for, like Margot said, venue, transportation, refreshments, and that's obviously the staff time takes to develop and to facilitate the training.
If you have a question, please press star 1.
Okay, we have one that it's come through the Q&A module here. How do you prevent your training session from becoming an actual Consumer Advisory Committee meeting? How do you set rules that set the two apart?
That's a great question. I mean, one very important thing is to be very clear that this is not a regular meeting. This is a special event. We set out ground rules at the beginning about what this meeting is and is not going to do, what this training is and is not going to do. And we also have a parking lot, which is a very effective way, and many of you may be familiar with this, but a very effective way of running meetings and running trainings. There were issues that came up that really we could not address because it was really part of a future discussion that needs to be at a CAC meeting, not here. And people understood that that was needed. Sometimes we were able to come back to the content of the question. Sometimes the content was able, what people understood that the content was really more appropriately placed at a future CAC meeting. So, you know, I think that setting those ground rules, using the parking lot, and setting those expectations needs to be pretty clear. You know, we did not have full participation at the training. Some people felt that it was a long day. Some people had problems with other appointments and issues. So, you know, that is obviously a a barrier that you want to try to prevent as much as you can in terms of getting full participation or reasonably full participation of the members there.
And let me add that the parking lot was very effective, because after the meeting was over, we went back over the parking lot issues. The community liaison that was there took notes, and by the time we convened the meeting a month later, she had already had action plans and had discussion points as part of the agenda with the chair to have it ready for discussion at the meeting. So definitely have a parking lot ready and let the members know that they will be getting those addressed.
Great. Thank you both. Okay, our next question. Could you talk more about building meaningful agendas on an ongoing basis so that members are providing meaningful input into important systems and quality issues?
Sure. So one of the things that we emphasized in the training was everyone's desire to have a meaningful engagement process and not to go to meetings for the sake of having meetings. I think it was a value that everyone, you know, strongly agreed upon. When we did the activity around meaningful agendas, again, my style, and I think most people who do training style, is not to just say, here's what a meaningful agenda looks like. Rather, to put together some lousy agendas, some strong agendas, and some not so strong agendas, and ask people to sort of look at them and say, what makes it weak? What makes it strong? What would you do next time? And through that activity, we were able to help them define for themselves what they thought that criteria would be, and how they would know if something was lousy or strong, and what they could do about it. One of the things that came out in the room was, gosh, you know, we didn't realize or we didn't think that we had the ability to inform an agenda. One of the things that came across was the idea of the feedback loop, and that we need to have old business and new business discussed, so that we're not just going to discuss something one meeting and then forget about it. So all these things are values that I think we all know intuitively, and that we could easily put in a sort of a binder to say, look, here's what a meaningful agenda is. But my experience is that helping people come to those conclusions themselves and reflecting on it themselves can be actually more impactful, and also lets them set up a set of their own values and criteria as a group, so that they can know moving forward, hey, wait, this agenda looks like there's five people talking at us for 2 hours and then we have lunch. And I don't think I want to go to a meeting like that, and I don't understand how that is a meaningful an opportunity for me to provide and our committee to provide meaningful input into plan policies and procedures.
And also, if I can add, that is, if you do not have a chair already selected by the committee members, please select one. But if not, have select 2-3 people that will put together the agenda with input from the remaining committee members. That is how you are truly going to have buy-in and commitment, because they feel, now that they're trained and they know what an effective agenda looks like, if you will get buy-in from them if they are putting together the agenda.
And one more thing I want to add is that this was a first, this is a pilot, and this was the first time these folks have been trained in these areas. I think that this training would be valuable for more experienced people or a mixed group. But we also have ideas about doing, you know, a second level of training. You know, once sort of that initial socialization has happened and some initial successes have been under their belts, I think it's very appropriate for us to do additional training for them to gain more expertise and confidence in dealing with more complex issues. So I don't think this is the only training that they would get. I would love to see, and I think they would be interested in doing additional training that would help, again, push the envelope and help them push a little further around the things that feel are critical for their community.
Thank you. Melissa, are there any more questions on the phone?
No, ma'am.
Okay. We have a few more here for Margo and John. How did you get consumers to agree to an all-day training?
Well, it started with the relationship that the community liaison had with the members, and because of, you know, HIPAA, they could not give me you know, telephone numbers. But fortunately, because I helped with the training and the recruitment, we both were able to get on the phone and ask them if they wanted to participate. Most of them said yes right away, but however, they may have a difficulty, they may have dialysis, or they may need to have their PCA, their personal care assistant, come with them. And that's why I said that you have to build in some flexibility in terms of the number of days you want to have it, the time, and the length of time that you have it. But, you know, once we got on the telephone and start having those discussions, the majority of them had already said that, yes, they wanted to participate in the training.
Yeah, I also want to say that we could have done many different models, including doing, you know, 2 hours one night a week for a month, or some things on the phone, you know, using just a telephone, not a computer. Use a telephone and some things with a and combine that with live sessions. So I think you do need to be flexible, and obviously if people have full-time work, you know, doing a full-day training is not possible, except we also were open to doing on the weekends. And I think the flexibility that John talked about is really critical.
Great, thanks. After the initial training, how often would you repeat a training session like this for an advisory committee?
I would not repeat this training. I would use it as reinforcing training so that see what things still remain to be a challenge, and then also take them to the next level, you know, 201. I do think that the training is just the beginning. I don't want to say that, you know, insert training equals success, a successful community advisory committee. I think it's part of technical assistance and support that you need to be thinking about on an ongoing basis for a committee like this. And, you know, this training is one important step in that direction, but not certainly a panacea.
And I also would add that it's very important for the committee members that were not able to attend that they get the training. And so we are currently working with the plan to make that happen for the 6 members that were not able to attend, as well as the other regions for the plan.
Okay, another question here. Did a diverse group of consumers participate, or only the most high-functioning consumers?
I'll let John answer that. I think it was diverse. There were several people that, I think several people had literacy issues. There were several people who had mobility issues. There was one blind person who was there. And I think that for the most part, we were able to sort of, because of the way that we developed the training in terms of the participation, and because we didn't want to rely on slides, we didn't use reading as the first and foremost thing that one has to do to participate, I think that all of them got something out of it. There was one gentleman, maybe John might say how he, you know, how he might have done, but I think it was a diverse group of people in terms of capabilities. John?
No, it was definitely a diverse group of people, and the one gentleman that Ms. Margot is speaking of, there was a literacy issue. However, because we did not read verbatim, or, you know, we did these activities, he got a lot out of the training. So we were able to tailor it to meet his needs as well.
Great. Okay, and our last question, how long have the Consumer Advisory Councils been meeting, and what has been the retention rate?
So the plan that I'm referring to, they have already had three meetings. The first one is when we talked about the ground rules, not the ground rules, but what the Consumer Advisory Committee was all about. Then they had another one 3 months later. Then they had the training. Then the 30 days later is when the next one convened. So right now, to date, there's been three committee meetings with this particular plan. And to answer your question in terms of retention, it's been between 13 and 15 members that would show up at every meeting. And remember, we recruited a total of 17 applications we'll receive. So we have the same group that's been showing up for the past three committee meetings.
For more information about this webinar series and other resources, including videos and podcasts, please visit resourcesforintegratedcare.com and follow us on Twitter at integrate_care.